Presented and produced by the National Public Housing Museum, this is Out of the Archives, an oral history podcast created from interviews with public housing residents from across the United States. I'm your host this month, Mark Jeschke. The stories in today's episode span from 1955 to the present day. For a full list of sources used in this episode, please check the episode notes in your favorite podcast platform. As we've collected oral histories over the past decade, narrators have shared a plethora of insights. Oral histories provide the museum, visitors, scholars, and other stakeholders with a clearer and more nuanced understanding of the history, past, and future of public housing. One of the great joys of building this archive is when trends and through lines arise. The community-led tenant patrol of the Henry Horner Homes, for example, or the Boys and Girls Clubs that served as a pillar of the Lathrop Homes, as well as other communities from across the country. And, on some occasions, a single individual is named again and again in our interviews. One such person is Mr. Wilbur Farley, affectionately known as Mr. Fix-It, for his dedication to improving where he lived, the Jane Addams Homes. The Jane Addams Homes, along with the Grace Abbott Homes, the Robert Brooks Homes, and Loomis Courts, all based in Chicago's Near West Side, made up a collection of public housing complexes known as ABLA. Over the decades, thousands of residents lived in the ABLA community, and some of the apartments still remain to this day. One of those buildings, the last of the Jane Addams Homes, is the future home of the National Public Housing Museum, which is set to open in fall of 2023. This episode, Everybody Needs Somebody to Love, is named after the second annual Mr. Farley Day, which took place on August 30th, 1986. We take a look at Mr. Farley's legacy, focusing on his love for the people and places that made up his life. The first narrator we'll hear from in this episode is Mr. Al Buford, another active resident in the ABLA community. Mr. Buford lived in the Jane Addams Homes from 1955 until 1990.
Also during that time, we're talking 1986, 87 now, I also was hired by Chicago Housing Authority Sports-O-Rama program to be the coordinator for the ABLA projects, which I did. And there were competitions in basketball, softball, volleyball, track. And out of 13 categories that year, ABLA took 7 first places. Nice. So it was an experience. And we also I also coached a team that took first place in the 12th District Police Softball League that same year. So it was a very exciting time for me. It was a very rewarding experience seeing the talent that these kids developed over the 7 years that I did that. And in that 7 years, I had about 250 kids come through that program alone. And it was awesome. I even arranged for those that qualified to get into UIC, into gymnastics, had they had the desire to do so. Around that same time, I also got involved with a very popular resident at the time was Mr. Wilbur Farley. Mr. Farley was known as Mr. Fix-It. He would paint window sills and put up new doors, and he took care of the animals in the animal court. That's what we called it, the animal court.
The animal court that Mr. Buford referred to was a courtyard in the ABLA community that featured 7 stone animal sculptures, created by Edgar Miller in 1938 as a part of the same Works Progress Administration project that also built the Jane Addams Homes. The animal court served as a meeting ground since its installation, providing a dynamic space to explore, commune, and play with other residents. To learn more about the animal court, we invite you to listen to an older episode of our podcast entitled Close to Home, Reflections on the Animal Court. Mr. Buford's relationship with Mr. Farley was a long-standing and productive one. The two men both worked diligently for years to provide for the Jane Addams community, even when they didn't have to. Because of the amount that Mr. Farley made as a full-time postal worker, his rent had been about $800 since 1978, an amount that he says could have bought him a home. He said to the Chicago Reader, "I could have moved, but everyone owes something to society. You can't play if you run, so I don't run. I liked the place, and I figured I was giving something back."
He approached me about a back-to-school party that he wanted to do. And I happened to be one of his neighbors at the time. I had moved from the Roosevelt Road address to a Taylor Street address, 1262 Taylor, as a matter of fact. And so I helped him organize a back-to-school party and was able to solicit the help of a lot of community businesses. I would go and make my sales pitch for their help, and they would provide us with hot dogs and hamburgers nice. And pop and school supplies and backpacks. So we would get all that stuff together. We'd do the back-to-school party. We'd have bands come. We'd have music. We even rented a stage. I was able to secure a lot of that through in-kind donations from different organizations.
And for the people who don't know about back-to-school parties and things like that, was that something the community had to pay for, or was that free?
Oh, this was free of charge. Mr. Farley would initially spend money from his own pocket to do all the things that he did. Initially, the painting and new doors for people's apartments. Eventually, he had gotten to the point where the paint companies would donate him paint. And he even organized the community to put awnings over their door, over their windows in the Jane Addams section that were row houses. And people, they gravitated to it. They loved the idea, and they all came out of their own pockets to help buy these awnings. And then it spread to other areas of the community. It was an awesome thing. It was a really awesome thing. And so that escalated from back-to-school parties. I did that with Mr. Farley for about 18 years. And he had the idea that he wanted to decorate the community for Christmas. So he would pay me to install Christmas lights and decorations on a two-block area of Taylor Street between Lido and Ada. And right now, today, you can go, when you go by the building, you'll see these slats of wood around the windows. Those I put up, and I used those to string lights around those windows. Did that for probably 18, 20 years as well, and then Mr. Farley foot the bill for all of that. Nice. And then I moved out of the neighborhood, and I moved to Waukegan, Illinois.
While being such a pivotal figure in the community, narrators emphasized how kind and egoless Mr. Farley was. As Mr. Buford pointed out, Mr. Farley truly went above and beyond for the ABLA community, spending his own money on upkeep supplies, dedicating his free time towards maintaining and beautifying the area, and earning him the respect and admiration from those around him. Marquita Gandhi, who lived in the Jane Addams homes from 1973 to 2009, reflects on his work and her own experiences with Mr. Farley.
Mr. Farley was a very humble man. One thing that he did, we all respected him. Nobody didn't disrespect him. And everybody looked up to him as a grandfather, right? You know, as us as kids, we looked up to him as a grandfather to us. His wife was so nice. She was so sweet. She used to come out and just sit out on the back a lot, you know, on their back. You know, she'd sit there just, you know, be relaxing or whatever. But Mr. Farley, he interacted more, you know, with the community than anybody. He used to go around. He actually used to keep the animal court clean. Like, even though they had janitors, like, if we, you know, on the weekend sometimes, you know, people hanging out and probably, you know, a lot of trash accumulated. He'll make sure that, you know, it get picked up. He'll probably get, you know, a couple of the kids or some adults, be like, come on, he got some garbage bags, gloves, come on, let's clean up, you know. And we kind of like did the same thing when, you know, when we got grown. So it was like we made sure that it stayed clean, you know, so the kids can be out there playing and stuff like that. You know, they make it so hard for the janitors when they had to come back there and clean up. So he really, you know, like, everybody loved Mr. Farley. He was like, everybody knew who Mr. Farley was. So it was like they could see him. He might not know your name, but he'll know who you belong to, like what family you come from. But he probably couldn't say your name, but he'd be like, I know you, you know. So I think he was 5'8 in height, brown, like caramel-like skin. He kind of was a little husky. Just a little bit, you know, to as his age progressed, you know, his, you know, weight came down some. But he wore glasses. Mr. Farley wore glasses. So he was a pretty decent guy.
Although Mr. Farley poured so much of his time, money, and resources into the community, some folks believe that he didn't always receive that love back. Mr. Godfrey Bay, who lived in the Jane Addams homes from 1956 until 1983, wanted to correct that. Mr. Bay, who was a chef in the neighborhood, shares his process for creating Mr. Farley Day, which took place on the last Saturday in August for several years.
When I got out of the military, and me and my wife, we moved from Michigan with my kids back into Chicago, we were staying with my mother-in-law, but my mom said she's leaving. And she said, I'll put you on my lease and you can take over my apartment. And so she put me on her lease, took me over the house and said, listen, here's my son. He just got in the military. I put him on my lease and I'm vacating my lease and he's going to take over. And that's how because that was a selective place that people really wanted to stay, right there to Mr. Farley. We live right across the street from Mr. Farley. So I already recognized Mr. Farley for his contributions and his the way he touched people in the community. As a person, as a man, and empowered them and made them feel worthy. And so I said to myself, when I looked over the community, I said, okay, you know, he does a lot for the community, but at the end of the day, the community really don't do nothing for him. So me and my wife got together and we printed up some little flyers. And I went to every apartment, every unit in that area, where I told you we cordoned. First, I put a proclamation out to have it proclamated. And then I went to everybody and I said, listen, we're going to celebrate Mr. Farley Day on the 31st of August. I said, and on that day, we're going to clean this community up. We're going to clean the community. We're going to clean the hallways. We're going to mop. We're going to paint. We're going to do everything. And then we're going to have a day of reckoning for him. I said, and I'm asking that if you contribute, I do not want you to get no more than $5 per unit, but not no less than a dollar. And I raised $1,600. And I took that money and I bought book bags and school supply. I took it to a supply place over on Randolph, and they must have gave me over $3,000 worth of stuff for $1,600. Plus we bought hot dogs and all the food and everything, because I told the business, I don't want you giving us nothing, but we do have some money, but if you want to add to that, we appreciate it, but we want to let you know we want to patronize you as much as you patronize us. And it was a win-win game. So we had plenty of food. And the funny thing about it, I said, I want to do contests. So I had the seniors doing baking contests. The kids did tug of war and burlap races. And then we had garden contests and hallway evaluation contests. So all I had was blue ribbons. So that means everybody was going to be a winner. So there was no loser in the game.
Mr. Byron Dickens, our next narrator, lived in the Jane Addams homes from 1966 until 2001. As another active resident of the Abla community, Byron fondly recalls his experiences growing up around Mr. Farley and the positive impact he had on his life when he needed it the most.
Could you describe Mr. Farley? What was he like?
Great guy. Meaning, would talk to anyone, even though in our gangbanging years, you know, definitely approachable. If catch you, hey, come here. Don't do that. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, give you a quarter. Back then, you know, a quarter combined a couple bags of chips. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? A couple candy bars. So that's the type of person he was. You know, it's the type of person you wanted to be like, you know, as an older, you know, hard working. Like I said, you know, he went to work at night. You know, which, you know, most of us probably in the house while he was at work. But in the morning, you know, he got up and you saw him out there working. So, great guy. I mean, caring guy. Care for his community. I can't remember the quote, but he always say that one of those, like, not only be proud of where you live, but live someplace where you can be proud of. You know what I mean? That was his one of his quotes. You know, be proud of where you live, but also, you know, live someplace where you can be proud of. And you know, by him working at the post office back in the 70s, he might have been paying $800 because they wouldn't have a ceiling cap. They wouldn't like 30%. You know what I mean? So, you know, $800 back then, you know, that's a house. I mean, it's a house today, but you know what I mean? But he stayed. And his wife wanted to move, you know. But he didn't want to move until he couldn't paint anymore. He used to paint the garbage can. He used to paint the poles, you know, the clotheslines. He didn't want to move until he came, because he saw, like, us talking to him. So you can get history. He saw where it's like, didn't nobody care anymore. Before he passed, that's when he wanted to move. Because he couldn't do what he'd been doing for so many years. You know, and you kind of feel that. You know, one of those, you know, God, if I can't be beneficial, you know, then just take me. You know, why I'm here. You know what I mean? So that's, you know, before he passed, that's the kind of feeling he had. Well, it came about when they used to do a back to school. The neighbors came together and did a back to school event. Well, it's basically playing music, passing out food, hot dogs, hamburgers, right? And then the older ones, you know, would hang out 10, 11 o'clock. Okay, y'all go ahead and go in the house. Then they would stay, you know what I'm saying, drink their beer or whatever. But this, you know, most of the people was working. You know what I mean? So they donated. So they had their fun. And then in 85, Al Jean thought that Mr. Farley was doing, remember, he not only cleaned up, painted the animals, but he also every winter put up Christmas lights around the building. Or he would help decorate the different porches with little trees. One day, Mayor Jane Burns gave, I was saying right before election, some small Christmas trees. Most of us, those who gathered, put it on their porch, and they put lights. Mr. Farley helped with that. So the neighborhood looked great. You know, you walk through there, you see Christmas lights. It was lit up, you know, especially down his back way. So that's some of the things he did on his own, you know, for volunteering. So Al Bruford used to help him, you know. And we took pride in that, you know. We took pride in Mr. Farley. Like I said, we thought he worked for Chicago Housing Authority for many years. They did donate the paint. They even gave, because under the buildings was what they call a basement. It used to be the laundromat where people go down and wash clothes. But they closed that. But they gave him a basement where he would keep his supplies. And then, you know, it's Christmas, like paint, stuff like that. So he wouldn't have to have it in his house.
The original iteration of Mr. Farliday would eventually come to an end by 1992. However, it would be revived in 1996 by some residents we've already had a chance to listen to, including Marquita Gandhi and Byron Dickens. Both were integral forces in bringing back Mr. Farliday for a younger generation for almost a decade, up until the last remaining residents from the Abla community moved away as the apartments were being demolished as a part of Chicago's plan for transformation.
So we actually, when we first actually did it, we did it in the Boys and Girls Club parking lot at first to see how to turn out and stuff like that. And then we just started doing it in the Animal Quilt when we seen we had a nice turnout. We was like, oh, okay, well, we'll just take it back to where it came from. So we did it over there until we actually all moved from over there.
Mm-hmm. How long did you do it until?
To at least to 2004, I think, was the last time we did it. Because everybody was starting to move over from like towards the end of 2004 to the beginning of 2005.
When they started tearing stuff down?
Yeah, they were tearing it down, but Roosevelt Square was actually there by then, so they was able to start moving people over.
Although Mr. Farley is no longer with us, many folks in the community still remember him as an upstanding member of ABLA. In this final segment, Mr. Bay reflects on the time after moving from ABLA. Although he had left, he stayed in touch with the community and Mr. Farley for years after moving out. During one of his visits back, Mr. Bay learned that Mr. Farley's storage base was robbed, with Christmas lights, paint, and other tools all being stolen, and he went to see him afterwards. In this segment, he shares his reflections on the man who meant so much to his community. To this day, the ABLA community still reunites every summer for their annual Family Fun Day picnic in the neighborhood, carrying on the traditions of community building that Mr. Farley embodied.
Godfrey, he says, you know, all my life, these people have been trying to run me out of these projects. He said, but they have been successful as running the projects out of me because he lived and he died for that community. He did. There's no doubt about it. And he was a humble man. Okay? He didn't look for no reward. He respected everybody. He had no bitter relationship or word to anybody. Anybody give him a bitter word, he'll find a way to turn it back into a positive message or a word of understanding. And without him ever telling anybody, he never told nobody, but they already knew he loved them.
This episode of Out of the Archives was written, produced, and edited by Mark Jeschke and Liu Chen. The episode was mixed and mastered by Seth Engel. The theme song for Out of the Archives is titled Born in the Blues, written, performed, and recorded by former Stateway Gardens resident Keith Hudson. Out of the Archives is made possible through the generous support of the Illinois Arts Council Agency, the Kresge Foundation, the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, and the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. We'd like to give one last huge thanks to our oral history narrators, Godfrey Bay, Al Buford, Byron Dickens, and Marquita Gandhi, as well as the oral historians who gathered these stories, Francesco De Salvatore and Shakira Johnson. For more oral histories, check out our other episodes of Out of the Archives at nphm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to sharing more stories with you very soon.